Hello, this is Richard Allibone on webtalkradio.net, and this week I'm taking a different view of the paranormal. I'm looking at it from afar, as it were, to see the whole big picture, which is very different to the picture when looking at different areas of the paranormal, which I've normally done in my shows. So this week I want to try and sort out the terrible muddle that we've got the paranormal into. There are so many different parts with different names that overlap, and one particular experience might be called by many different names. For example, if a person has a sudden vision of a dead relative, this might well be called a hallucination, or a spirit, remote viewing, or a near-death experience, clairvoyance, or various other names, which of course is very unhelpful and extremely confusing. And then there is another quite separate area of the paranormal which we all understand, and this is trance. And this involves hypnosis, self-hypnosis and meditation. We think we know about trance and altered states of consciousness, but the psychologists have got it all wrong, and they've never discovered what trance really is, even though there is a scientific answer. Now there's another part of the paranormal which we don't understand, but we all do it every night and generally remember it in the morning, dreaming. This I discussed with a guest in a show entitled Origin of Dreams and Trance, so you might like to go to my archived shows to hear that one again and learn why we dream. But dreaming is a rather special trance state, during which we see life controlled by the unconscious. Sometimes our unconscious can cause us to move about and do things when asleep, which we call sleepwalking. I know because I once did it myself. One of my guests makes very good drawings in his sleep. Then there is lucid dreaming, which is a state in which a dreamer can control his dreams consciously when in bed or even during the day when awake. It all gets a bit spooky, but it really is possible, and we're learning more and more about these things all the time. One thing that we're learning are the details of the trance state and what happens in the brain, but also that the trance state is the ESP or telepathic state of mind. But more of that later. I should be talking about trance up till the time of my segment, when I'll explain what trance is and how it works, as well as the how and why of telepathy. After the segment, I'll look at telepathic experiences which need a state of trance in the sender as well as the receiver, so it's as well to understand a bit about trance before dealing with telepathy. Right, in order to start talking about trance, it's best to think of hypnosis, where we are urged to sleep by the hypnotist but cannot sleep because he keeps on talking. And what happens is that consciousness is made to rest while our unconscious brain is still active. In this state, it's possible to put ideas or suggestions, sometimes without our knowledge, and also it can work the other way round, where the hypnotist can get us to tell him about memories from our subconscious that consciousness has forgotten about. We can be taught or learn how to hypnotize ourselves, which is called self-hypnosis, which can have many beneficial effects, from stress reduction to improvement in things like sport. Then of course there's meditation, which for all intents and purposes is the same as self-hypnosis. All this is fairly common knowledge. What isn't common knowledge is the state of mind that produces these trance effects. What initiates the trance state is a heightened awareness of nothing. In other words, the mind is thinking of nothing, although it is looking for something to think about. This can be measured on the sides of the head as minute voltages, which normally show that we are thinking. when we're thinking of nothing, it shows up as a stable voltage at the natural frequency of the mind, which is 6 cycles per second. This was demonstrated some years ago on a special EEG called a mind mirror, and this is the fundamental indicator of trance, which we've achieved by carefully slowing down the mind's frequency from about 30 or 12 cycles to 6 cycles per second. There are now many ways of achieving this. We can buy a sound and light machine that slowly reduces the flicker of light and sound. We can get clever earphones that induce a falling beat frequency in the mind. We can buy CDs with a hypnotic message or just quiet music with a falling frequency in the background. These systems of producing the 6-cycle balanced symmetrical state of mind are normally used with the subject relaxing in a comfortable position, but they work even better when in a flotation tank, where there is absolutely no input to mind. There are other methods of reducing trance which have been used for thousands of years, and they include taking hallucinogenic drugs or even galantamine, which enhances dreaming. Rather than using a flotation tank, the ancient peoples wrapped themselves in wool to reduce the sensory input, and the Egyptians used a special spoked wheel through which the sunlight flickered as it was rotated to give, say, 15 cycles a second, which slowly reduced to 6 cycles a second as the wheel slowed down. My research of Stonehenge shows that it was apparently designed as a trance machine in which the echoes of drummers could be made to start at 12 cycles a second and then reduce to 6 cycles, which is the natural frequency of the building. It was not by chance that the building was exactly the right size to echo at 6 cycles per second. So the front cover of my book Sublimity shows a view of Stonehenge. But this trance state can come about out of the blue, as it were, or even from a straight state of terror, where the mind is highly alert but with no relevant information to process. Now, another point, any of these states of mind, from hypnosis to terror, can bring about a very special deep trance, which, if held for a few seconds, will bring about a life-changing experience. This is known by at least 30 different names, which all adds to the misunderstanding of the experience. I like the term ecstatic enlightenment, but many might know it as a mystical or special religious experience. Apparently, 1 in 3 people have this once during a lifetime, and generally from prayer, which can be viewed as a religious meditation. As for an explanation, it seems clear to me that the heightened awareness physically overloads the mind, which causes old cells or synapses to be discarded, which bring about a feeling of seeing the world in a different way. Having experienced this myself and then studied it, I feel able to make a fairly bold claim about it, which accords with all the facts. I've written up my own experience in my book Sublimity, along with summaries of 4 books on the subject. This experience is generally one which is remembered for life, as it brings about a great feeling of love and satisfaction. People generally keep it to themselves, be it a religious or secular experience, but when they do speak of it, there are commonly key words and phrases that are very often used. Examples of these words are feelings of eternity, release, or a complete sense of liberation. Words like certitude, no more fear of death, and seeing over the mountains are often used. But here's another interesting thing about this. Recently, I was researching near-death experiences where people who are resuscitated from clinical death give their description of the memories of that experience. Often they talk of a life-changing experience and use those very same words that are used to describe the ecstatic enlightenment. Clearly, the mental state is the same as an ecstatic enlightenment, where an empty mind is restarted, having heightened awareness but no input to mind during the resuscitation. Or perhaps it would be best viewed as a state of mental terror, which is understandable as the mind has just been restarted by the doctors. During my investigation of the paranormal, I found many times that there were similarities between experiences and states of mind, between what have always been regarded as quite different experiences. And the part of the paranormal I'm going to talk about now is no exception, and that is healing. There are supposedly very many different types of healing, using different methods, techniques, or strange forces, but healing is healing, and they are basically all the same. Unlike hypnosis, the healer and the patient go into a trance in order that the patient's immune system starts to heal itself. Sometimes that's all there is to it, but generally healing involves something much more subtle, and it seems to be a connection of minds. The intuitive rapport or empathy between them encourages the necessary deep trance, with the empty minds working at six cycles, which is the necessary condition for the healer to sense the problem and then to return some necessary healing suggestions. This is similar to hypnosis, but it's all done silently and unconsciously, using our abilities of mind-to-mind, ESP or telepathy, call it what you like. I've had many guests on my show talking about their particular method of healing, all of which work in their own way, and when the necessary empathy is there, it works fine. If it isn't there, then there might be some degree of healing, but what might be termed meditation or self-hypnosis. But healing can be amazingly successful if that special psychic something can be brought into play. I think it's best to use the word telepathy, by which the information flows from mind to mind. We all like to think of our own mind as being perfectly private, which of course it is, almost all the time, although very occasionally information can flow from the mind of one person to the mind of another person, and even the thought of that is uncomfortable. But in the next section of my show, I'm going to discuss the science of telepathy, which has shown us both how and why messages are sent from mind to mind. Let's start with why. Now, there's a perfectly good reason why, and it's all about the biology of life. We've all been taught that DNA holds the key to life, but that's all it is, just a key, together with an outline description of an individual's ancestors. And the important thing about this, from my argument's point of view, is that all life proceeds by obtaining information on growth from other members of its species. So it seems that a chicken egg grows into a chicken by receiving information across space from other chickens, giving the information on how to grow and what colour its feathers should be, etc. But more than that, a young chicken receives a full programme of instinctive information by mind to mind from other chickens. Apparently this is the way life works. The study of DNA has shown us the chemistry of growth, but not where the information comes from, and the same applies to man. The channel for instinctive information is what occasionally channels information from mind to mind. The explanation for telepathy is just as simple as that. but the scientific community's perverse scepticism ensures that the obvious answer is kept under wraps. When it comes to how it happens, the science of telepathy has come to the rescue. The carrier of telepathy has been shown to come mainly from outer space, as there is a peak of telepathic reception noted just when the Milky Way comes over the horizon. This has been arrived at by analysing the times of successful telepathy from thousands of telepathic tests. That's science at its best, and it has been shown that this carrier is affected as it passes through the magnetic fields of our Sun, which all seems very logical. More than that, the same carrier has been noted as coming from the major planets in our solar system, which again is logical, as the carrier of telepathy appears to come from planets in which gravity alters the inertia of the planet, causing it to rotate rather than carry on in a straight line. For more details about this, see my book or website. The other big question mark over the paranormal is the origin of our strange ability to go into trance. But in order to discover why we go into trance, we first have to be sure what it is. It is certainly not just a sleepy state of mind, but its main function is to reduce conscious thought in order to stop us rejecting instinctive behaviour. This might seem rather strange on the face of it, but it's absolutely vital to our race that our conscious thought does not override our instinctive actions. For example, our instinctive sexual urges are fundamental. We wouldn't be here if we thought about the results of our sexual desires, but we don't, and that's the whole point. The trance system prevents logical thought about instinctive things. It's a very special human attribute, having evolved with consciousness, and to me it explains many of the details that are associated with trance. For instance, while some people seem to receive telepathy as a fairly normal part of their lives, the rest of us can only access it with great difficulty by reverting to the non-human state, that is, with nothing much going on in consciousness, where instinct rules. This, of course, is the condition of deep trance in humans. I do hope that this all made some sense, as my description of how and why telepathy is a normal fact of life, and what is, and what it is, and what it's for. So now I'll go back to discussing the main point I want to make in this show, and that's to point out that most of the paranormal is purely a combination of trance and telepathy, which is all clouded in mystery by too many names for the same thing. Healing is a fine example, of course. As I said before, healing is healing, and without any understanding of how it works, there have been many ideas as to what it is. We hear of a life force or energy, and ki spelt ki or qi, and Max Cade spoke of state 5. And sometimes angels are given the honour, or prana, soul energy, chakra energy, vibrational energy, magnetic or astral layer. Healing can be given by the spoken word in a deep trance state, which was done by Edgar Cayce, or automatic writing from a Brazilian man, Chico Xavier. They were both able to contact the mind of the sick person to understand what the problem was and how best to heal it. Lucid dreamers often claim to heal that way. Then there are the traditional healing methods, laying on of hands, spiritual healing, both of which claim that the healer is purely an instrument of a higher power. Then there's the Japanese Reiki, using acupressure points, They talk of a universal mind or universal life energy. And going on, then there's Hawaiian healing, trance body therapy, empowered healing, emotional freedom therapy, healing touch, polarity therapy, pranic healing, quantum touch, shamanic healing, even theta healing. That's surely enough to be going on with. They undoubtedly all work, sometimes, even with distant healing. But surely healing is healing, and they all use trance and hopefully telepathy. I find that most healers have some psychic or telepathic ability, but that's not the end of healing. There's past life regression therapy and the similar spirit release, which use hypnosis to bring out information from the unconscious about our past lives, which are affecting the patient in this life. The healer is able to give explanation and corrective healing by this method, which brings us on to reincarnation. That has been part of some religious beliefs for thousands of years. But it's not all in the realms of mystery. When a child receives instinctive information, perhaps when still in the womb, it sometimes happens that information about the life or death of another person is implanted in his unconscious brain. It might be a relative, alive or dead, or it sometimes appears to happen that information comes from perfect strangers. But it does happen, and it can adversely affect people, which may be helped by past life therapy. Now, when it comes to the telepathic sixth sense, this is something that some people have, and which is sometimes difficult to live with. The power sometimes appears for no particular reason, or disappears the same way. For someone in business, it can be a great asset, as intuition can tell if a business contact is reliable or not. Most people know that identical twins can be telepathic. They sometimes do the same things when apart, and even feel the other's pain. Another fact is that severely autistic children sometimes appear telepathic. And now I'm going to discuss other ways that telepathy appears to us humans when we share unconscious thoughts or ideas in some sort of trance. Jung called it archetypes. Stories of monsters and fairies have always been part of folklore, and today there are sightings of UFOs, which are the same thing. Sometimes these will be multiple sightings, where an impression is transmitted to other people. It doesn't have to be all make-believe. Going on, a medium is a psychic person who can pick up information telepathically, supposedly from spirits. But tarot card reading and crystal ball gazing are pure telepathy. I'm firmly convinced that spirit mediums, that is, people that practice spiritualism, who contact deceased relatives are only reading the minds of the sitters, not the world of spirits. Then there are spiritual surgeons and healing, which is surely another branch of healing, in which the healer senses by ESP the nature of the required healing. Another branch of the paranormal is that of hauntings. It seems that the telepathic carrier can become trapped in quartz crystals that are in the ground or building material, and that this memory slowly leaks out. It might seem a wild idea, I agree, but it certainly covers the facts of hauntings and ghostly hallucinations, which appear to happen when there is quartz nearby. We've all heard about ghosts in old buildings, but they can belong to a section of road or even a lake in an area of granite, Loch Ness for example. But there's more to it than that. Sometimes there can be multiple sightings, in the same way as UFO multiples. But also these hauntings are self-perpetuating, as someone that has a fright and sees a ghost may well transmit the vision telepathically into the stone. While seemingly far-fetched, all this does agree with the science of telepathy and has been part of written records of the paranormal for millennia. Another part of the paranormal is known as remote viewing. This is a fairly modern title which is used for almost any telepathic experience which adds to the general confusion. But Wikipedia says it is the practice of seeing impressions about a distant or unseen target using paranormal means, in particular ESP. But it goes on to say that it is also considered a pseudoscience. Having ignored that comment, it is true to say that remote viewing can generally be explained as picking up telepathic information from a person remotely, and there is nothing particularly special about that. But experiments which exclude the possibility of telepathy have been set up and have shown amazing results. Probably the best known was by Uri Geller at Stanford University Remote Viewing Lab, where he was able to read a shaken dice inside a box. You might call it ESP, but certainly not telepathy. But telepathy seems to be the answer in out-of-the-body experiences, which are sometimes given by people following an operation. They recall viewing the operation from above, giving details of the operation and conversations which they could not have known. But this always seems to me to be telepathy with one of the operating team, where heightened emotion will be likely to encourage telepathy. Also, the near-death experience under similar circumstances seem to evolve telepathy with someone in the team, as well as the ecstatic enlightenment experience that I detailed previously. Near-death experience, or NDE, is a title given to many paranormal experiences not necessarily connected with the resuscitation from clinical death. One website on NDEs boasts over 2,500 detailed cases covering a broad range of personal experiences. And after that, I've still not talked of dowsing, speaking in tongues, physical mediumship, or seeing auras, but they are all branches of the paranormal which are understandable by trance or telepathy. One last one is precognition, or seeing into the future. Recent tests have reported to have demonstrated this as a fact, but I believe the logic of the tests were flawed. Time marches forward, and it doesn't go wrong. Anyway, today I've covered most of the multiple aspects of the paranormal, which can all be boiled down to our natural and normal abilities of trance and telepathy, which I hope you can see have understandable explanations. This is Richard Allibone signing off for today from webtalkradio.net. Bye for now.